We all have a yearning for love, but relationships can be confusing and complicated. Dr. Tammy Balaszewski says it all starts from within. It starts with a journey to center. Here's your host for Journey to Center on Empower Radio, Dr. Tammy Balaszewski.
Hello, my friend and you sweet, sweet soul. Thank you for taking some time out of your day to connect with us here on Empower Radio and Journey to Center. Yes, relationships. They can indeed be challenging and confusing. And what I find as a marriage counselor is that even people that have been together for years still struggle in understanding themselves and their partner. And many seem to believe their biggest problem is that they need to communicate more effectively. But my guest today says that's rarely the case. So if you'd like some support and wisdom in saving or strengthening your relationship, you are here in the right place, here today, right now. We are here with Dr. Lee Bockham. Dr. Bockham is a best-selling author, self-help influencer, therapist, life coach, and speaker. He has spent the last three decades facilitating health and healing for couples, individuals, families, and organizations. Dr. Bockham is trained in marriage and family therapy, has two master's degrees, and a PhD in the field. However, when he found himself discouraged by the limits of psychotherapy, Dr. Bockham completed special training in community building as well as life coaching. Dr. Bockham has been featured on ABC, NBC, Fox, and CBS, and is a popular speaker on a number of topics relating to self-help. He is also the author of four books, including How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps, Even If Only You Want to, Recovering from the Affair, Your Guide to Saving Your Marriage After Emotional or Physical Infidelity. Third book is Thrive Principles, 15 Strategies for Building Your Thriving Life, and his recent book, The Immutable Laws of Living, The Inspirational Blueprint to Living Your Meaningful Life. Challenging the norms of traditional therapy, Dr. Bockham created a program to recover marriages on the edge of divorce. His website and teachings are estimated in providing guidance for 75,000 people around the world who chose to build a thriving marriage. And his podcast, Save the Marriage, is available around the world and has nearly 2 million listeners. So Dr. Bockham, thanks for being here today to share your wisdom and expertise with our audience here on Empower Radio.
Oh, Tammy, thank you for having me back.
I am so excited to get into this material with you because I think it's so important and can help so many people because marriage can be tough.
Absolutely. It's quite a challenge as the statistics will show us. It's a coin flip.
Isn't that true? I mean, we all think, you know, we're going to get married and live happily ever after, but what, 50% of people get divorced?
Yeah.
And then of the 50% that remain married, are they happy? Are they thriving? Are they really using this opportunity called marriage to grow and find fulfillment? I doubt that percentage is all that high.
Unfortunately, I think that it, a lot of that is because we don't understand what we're getting into. And there's not a whole lot of education. You know, basically, you get thrown through the wolves.
That's true. You read the fairy tales and it doesn't really get into the purpose behind attraction and falling in love and happily ever after. So I'd love to start there, Dr. Bockham. What is the real purpose for relationship or marriage?
Yeah, so we humans are connecting creatures. We have to have those connections. I mean, it's in our wiring. It's in our DNA. It's in our we have to have it even physically. And so this is the place, the relationship that kind of society has said is the place for the deepest connection. And so, as I said, I don't think people are prepared for that. You know, you basically, you spend some time falling into love. So you infatuation, right? You have this infatuation period. And so then you go through the ceremony. And I remember my ceremony, you know, it's 40 minutes and I'm walking out going, wait, that's it. Now I'm married. I came in single and I leave married. So what now? And we went to premarital counseling, and I did premarital counseling for a number of years. I covered 8 different churches locally. So anybody who was going through those 8 different churches crossed my office for several sessions. And I knew all along that those sessions weren't going to do it for one simple reason. Every single couple who came through my office was so in love that they had figured they had beaten the odds already. They had figured it out. All their friends had not, but they had figured it out. And so part of what I was trying to help them understand is they didn't have it figured out, that things were going to change. And I wanted them to know that on the front side, because if you know things are going to change on the front side, you're not so surprised when it happens. And then somewhere I said, please just remember, some guy somewhere in some office told you it's going to be different, and here's how you need to shift. And the shift that has to happen is to become a we. And that's my term for it. It's a very simple term, we. And so what happens, I believe, in the process is you've got two people, a you and a me, and they find some attraction to each other. And originally, it's just, you know, a you. I'm walking around the world and there's a me, and we see each other and there's something there. And so we get to know each other. And more we start identifying not just that you and that me, but you and me. And you and me gets closer and closer and more connected. And then we get married. And then along the way comes the struggles. And if we don't cross over to that we, and I don't think it's automatic because I don't think people know they're trying to get there, you and me becomes you versus me. And that's where the marriage begins to be strained. I think there are actually two places it gets strained. One is it becomes oppositional. There are, you know, control struggles, power struggles, feelings of disconnection. You know, we start a marriage by saying, I want to marry you because I want you to know I love you. And then about the time we marry, we say, so how are you going to love me? And so then, you know, we get into this, who's doing more? And the second thing that happens is couples tend to get to that place where they, I call it the pause button marriage. You know, they think they hit the pause button on their relationship because they've got kids or they've got a job or, you know, they've training or schooling or friends or athletic endeavors or hobbies or whatever, and thinking all along in the back of their head, well, you know, once I'm beyond that, we'll unpause it and go back to us. And the fact is that relationships, particularly human relationships, are either growing or declining, right? They're growing or receding. There's no stable point. And so they come back and they, you know, they unpause and they're looking at each other going, wait, who are you? What are we doing here? Right. And so between not knowing you're trying to get to a we and our tendency to hit the pause button, marriages get into trouble.
They do. And then how do you work together? And that's what I see: power plays, power struggles, trying to dominate and be in control. And you really do have to approach it as a team and not go into that corner.
Right. And that's our tendency. You know, if we don't know, we got to do this as a team. I just finished a podcast recording that will come out down the road, you do know you're a team, right? Because that's a quote. I was sitting in my office and I had this couple, and every time they would come in, they would just turn to each other and go after each other. You know, they were just, and I finally, I just stopped. I said, wait, you guys do know you're a team. And they looked at me blankly and I said,
I can see that.
Don't you? And, you know, so that you either become a team or you become the opposition. And so that's the question. Can a couple make that turn to be a we, to, you know, approach everything in life as a we, or do they stay at that you versus me mode, get to that place? And then, you know, as the disconnection happens, then they begin to be at risk for other problems. Like, you know, you mentioned the affair book. And this is also where therapy falls short, because therapy has started a lot to rely on communication skills.
Yes.
And, you know, so this has happened quite a few times. I'd have a couple in my office and they'd come in, they say, you know, you need to teach us to communicate better. And so I would have them talk with me. And, you know, 20 minutes later, I'd say, you know, what's interesting, for the last 20 minutes, I have understood every single word you said. Mm-hmm. And I think you have understood every word you said. So there's not a communication problem. There is a perception problem with each other, and that's bigger than the communication problem. If I give you communication tools, all I'll be doing is teaching you to fight better. That's all it's going to come from. You'd be more effective in your arguing, but you're not going to get anywhere better. And what we have to change is how you're perceiving each other and how you're perceiving the relationship. So communication just doesn't get there.
Yes. And that's what I tell people. You need to listen more and talk less. It's not about being understood. It's about understanding. And then that creates connection.
And maybe even assume not your enemy, because that's the assumption that they fill in with. You know, this is the bad. I'm the good guy here. You're the bad guy. I'll even go a little step further. Part of what I cover in my Save the Marriage System is pseudo Well, let's talk. It's how to get to intimacy. And I use the model that I learned in community building. Scott Peck created this process of building community. And he said there are four steps to community. And I've just taken those and said that community is really for couples intimacy, right? And so we always start at pseudo intimacy. This is where couples, you know, they're amazed at how they're on the same wavelength and they like the same stuff. And oh gosh, you know, I remember my wife and I talking, you know, long hours at night, and we realized that we had probably been within 50 yards of each other several summers on the same beach at the same time. We're like, ooh, what are the consequences? I mean, what are the possibilities of that, right? I mean, we didn't meet each other, but you know, you start doing those comparisons. We're like, oh, we're so alike. And you come to believe that you are just alike. And so that's pseudo intimacy because it assumes that we're just alike. The next thing that happens is at some point you have some disagreement that blows that apart. And that can happen quickly or slowly, but it's going to happen where you go, wait, I thought you liked this. And you know, suddenly you're going, you're not who I thought you were. And what we assume at that point in chaos, that's that stage chaos, we start struggling with each other because we're trying to get the person back to where they were, which is, by the way, where they never were. Right?
An illusion or a projection on our part.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's the surface stuff. You know, it's the restaurants and the music and all stuff like that. And so we try to get the person back to being just like us. But both people are doing that because both have assumed from different places. So then you go to the next stage, and the next stage is emptiness. And this is the stage where, and when I say this in conferences, couples will groan, which tells me that they know what I'm talking about. You know, it's just where you're looking at each other going, I don't even know what to do with you. I have no idea what to do because you're different than me, and I have no idea how to get beyond that. And that's a harsh stage. I mean, at least in chaos, you know, while you're arguing and struggling with each other, there's energy, even if it's not a positive energy, there's energy to it.
Yes.
And you're engaged in some way. So you can go, okay, well, we're still, you know, we're still talking and stuff. And then the emptiness comes along and we're like, I don't even know what to say anymore. And what they don't realize is that's a necessary stage to get to intimacy, which is where you can say, we're nothing alike. And that's really cool. Now we get to learn about each other. Now we get to discover different ways of perceiving things. But you've got to accept that the other person was never like you and that that's an okay place to be. And so many couples bail out at chaos and emptiness that they never get to that place where they deeper, get the intimacy. Yeah.
Deeper connection. You know, I kind of see the relationships as a MasterCard symbol. There's you, there's me, and there's places we overlap. And I love the places my husband and I overlap, but I appreciate the places we don't. Because if he was just like me, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need a left brain somewhere. He's very left-brained and downstairs. So we see the world and life very, very differently. But instead of saying my way is right and your way is wrong, I'm like, tell me more. I want to understand. Because he does a lot of things really well and great. And there's things I think he could improve on. And there's things he think I can improve on. But we found a way to have this friendship and respect for our similarities and our differences. And I think that's what helps us thrive.
Yeah, that's where you find where you're complementary. You know, this, I'm tired of the compatibility theory that floats around. A lot of the online dating sites try to find a compatibility, assuming that there's any truth to the fact that if two people see things alike, then they must match up correctly and they must fall in love. And no research shows it. But so some people will say, you know, we're opposites, opposites attract. And other people will say, you know, birds of a feather flock together. And then they'll say, which one is true? To which I'll respond, both, because it depends on how you work that through. If you're showing up with your best self, if you're bringing your strengths to the relationship, so two strong individuals bringing their best selves to the relationship, then instead of compatibility, you're talking about complementary.
How
do you complement each other? And so for you and your husband, you may have a strength that he's a little weak or vice versa. And so instead of, you know, saying you're doing it wrong, you go, okay, where's the strength of this? How can we use our differences to strengthen the relationship? One of the things that people often say when I talk about this we is, oh, you know, they imagine this kind of like, you know, the couple that, and I'm not speaking poorly about these couples, but, you know, have the same shirts on, eat the same food, you know, kind of an ego mass. that's fine if that's, you know, what does their relationship, but that's not what it has to be. I'm talking about we as an attitude. We're in this together. We've got each other's backs. We bring our best selves and our best attributes to the relationship. And that's what makes it its strongest self. That doesn't have anything to do with a mind meld or losing yourself to the relationship. It's about bringing your best self to the relationship.
I think that's fantastic. And then, yeah, as you were saying, I believe Steve opens my mind and helps me cultivate strengths that aren't necessarily my innate strengths. And I think I open his heart. He grounds me and opens my mind, and I expand him and open his heart. And it works really well. But we're, again, not trying to say my way is right and your way is wrong. It's like your way works for you and I want to know more. And he goes, your way works for you and I want to know more. We want to understand each other. It does create that intimacy. And then our ripple effect and influence is even more powerful because of that.
Yeah. You bring your best selves to it. And, you know, part of that process is a learning process. Yes. I still sit. So I'm coming up on in a couple of months on 30 years of marriage. And I'm still like, oh, I keep learning stuff about my wife that, you know, how what her strengths are. And, you know, also the places that are some struggles for her. And that's 30 years later. I found places where I'm not playing we, how I need to step back and say, wait, I was trying to do that on my own and we need to stand together. Mm-hmm. And so this is a lifelong process.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we're each aspects of the infinite. So there's always going to be something more to explore and investigate for ourselves and for our partner. And I think when we start to think we know ourselves completely or know our partner completely is when things can start to get a little bit stale.
Yeah. Yeah. And we and delusional.
There's that.
You've been fooled again.
That's the assume. I assumed I knew this person completely. And then you made an ass out of what you and me.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Dr. Bauckham, I think a really important subject that I'd like to delve into a little bit more also is the subject of infidelity. Because sometimes when the bloom has fallen off of the rose, it's natural to look somewhere else and start to become infatuated with maybe a coworker or somebody you met down the street or whatever. So often I think when people indulge that and then the other person finds out or you decide you want to work on the marriage, so often it's fractured and they don't recover. But you say that it is possible to recover. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, in fact, I see lots of marriages that come through infidelity actually stronger on the backside because now they know what was at risk. So for me, infidelity, there are other experts in infidelity, let me just be clear, that have kind of subcategorized affairs as different types of affairs. And there is some, because I talk with people who say, well, my affair was this. And I'm like, okay, good. So now what? You know, now that you have that, what are you going to do about that? Because the path back to recovery, with one exception, is the same. And the exception is when you're actually talking about somebody who has addictions, either to relationships or to sex. And then you're at a different level of what you're having to deal with. For the typical affair, there are two factors that happen. One of them is a shared factor, meaning both people have to hold responsibility. The other is on the person who commits the affair. So we talked about the connection that we humans, we like connection. We have to have it. I mean, that it's in our wiring so much so that if we don't have that connection, we can feel physical symptoms of that disconnection, physical pain, depression, anxiety, all from not having that connection. And so if we're not getting it where we expect it, we start going, where am I going to get that? Some people find that connection through safer places, you know, work or hobbies or kids and places like that where they can, you know, kind of pull from there, but it's still missing from the primary relationship. And so when a couple creates, not by their choice, I mean, not by a conscious choice, but it happens that they have created a disconnected relationship. Now the relationship is at risk. And the fact is that every relationship has waves in and out, up and down of levels of connection. So there are going to be times when there's more disconnection. And so then the question is, do you have boundaries in place to protect the relationship? Mm-hmm. Because if somebody doesn't abide by the boundaries of the relationship and they're in a disconnected relationship, they are at high risk for having some level of infidelity, whether it's emotional or physical. So part of the task is for a couple to be conscious of the connection, be working on the connection, and also be abiding by those boundaries. I mean, you know, basically in those wedding vows, you know, we vow to forsake all others. It's not that we say, and we'll never feel anything towards anyone else. We'll never feel attraction again towards anyone else. It's that we will keep them at arm's length. You know, we'll keep it safe. Mm-hmm. And so even our vows acknowledge the fact that there's a risk factor here that we have to choose to protect. We choose to forsake those others and to work on the connection of being, you know, a we. Mm-hmm. And so when couples find themselves in infidelity, the first thing I talk about is the fact that both people need to acknowledge that they were part of a disconnected relationship. Both people were part of that disconnected relationship. That doesn't mean the person who suffered the affair is responsible for the affair, but they're responsible for the disconnected relationship. Then the person who had the affair has to take on responsibility and say, yeah, I broke the boundaries. And so now, you know, a lot of times suddenly it's not that the person is, you know, the devil incarnate, but somebody who was disconnected and did not protect the relationship. So now we've changed the equation a little bit. And so now the question is, can we work back to a trusting relationship that we both feel connected about and are willing to protect as a team?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. That I like how you're articulating that, because so often I think through infidelity, the other person becomes the enemy and forgiveness is elusive and sometimes can seem impossible.
Yeah. You get to that. How could you ever do that? And yes. So then I'm pulling them back to, why did we allow that to happen? How could we have allowed that? And what can we do to move right to a different place?
Yeah. So again, you know, we're wired for relationships. We're social creatures and we long for connection. And if you're not getting that in your primary relationship, you're going to be looking to be fed in another way.
Yeah, fed is a great word. You know, it feels like starvation.
Yes, it does. So if we have the awareness, I was going to a different restaurant and I want to come back to this one and I want to be fed deeply in this particular relationship, and to put that in perspective, I think that can support both individuals and the whole forgiveness process, understanding and forgiveness. That's very helpful.
In fact, that is, so my next book comes out in October and it is actually on forgiving. I found that to be such an important piece, both in thriving in life and in building a stable relationship, that I decided to create a book. So I go through my forgive process. It's a six-step process to get to forgiveness. And so it's called The Forgive Process, and that comes out October. I think the ebook edition is July.
Well, I would love to have you come back and have that conversation as well, because I do feel it is a foundational piece for ourselves, so that we can get to a place of happy relationships and an empowered life. And until we really address that, we're not really ever going to be free. We're never going to be empowered. We're not going to thrive.
And what most people forget is that forgiving is, there's a skill set to it. You know, they assume that it's something metaphysical has to just magically happen. You know, I've got to suddenly forgive, or they feel forced into it. And as I've laid it out, there really are distinct steps to get there. You just follow the path if you're willing to. And that's the first thing. Somebody's got to be willing to move beyond that. And then after that, you're just following a path and repeating it.
And it can happen in layers. It doesn't necessarily happen at once, but there is a process.
Yeah, the decision is the only thing that happens at once. You got to decide, and after
you've
that,
you got to open your mind to that.
Yeah, sure. And after that, it is a process. Everything else is a process.
Yeah, to set your intention, you got to be willing. And I didn't want to forgive. I really didn't, but I knew that I wasn't going to find freedom or peace or happiness until I did. Yep. And it comes down to, you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And I finally got to the point. I want to be happy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we all want. I think that's what we all deserve. Dr. Lee Bauckham, I think you're amazing. Your wisdom is profound and accurate. And I would love for you to do a shout out and let people know where they can find your books, find you, connect with you, and get your new book, get your old book. Social media. give them the details.
Just so many places. So SaveTheMarriage.com is where I do a lot of work with couples who are on the edge. SaveTheMarriage.com, pretty easy to remember. The Save the Marriage podcast is on on podcast apps. If you're interested in finding more about the other books, probably the easiest place to go is Lee Balcom. It's LeeBaucom.com. That has a link to the different books, and you can learn a little bit more about me and follow that. And find me at Thriveology on everywhere and Save the Marriage everywhere else.
I just adore you. And I think your wisdom, again, is very well-rounded. And I relate to so much of what you're saying. And you've expanded my mind and heart even a little bit more, which is what I want to do and how I want to roll. And to my beautiful friends, guests, listeners, I appreciate so much your presence in my life and for being part of this conversation with Dr. Balcom. And I would love to be in touch with you, if we're not already, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And if you haven't already, go to my website, download my free ebook about removing those blocks to your prosperity so that you can live a more prosperous, joyful, fulfilling, and empowered life, along with a guided meditation. And I am honored. I'm honored by my producer, Jag, today, by Lee, by my friends here at Empower Radio, and by you. Relationships, to me, are what this is all about. So be in touch. Let's continue the conversation. Know you're in my heart and prayers. God bless you. Onward and upward. Bye for now.